to speak today. You're all who please stop talking. We didn't come to see you. Is Michelle Jester. Michelle is a research manager at the National Association of Community Health Centers, where she coordinates and carries out their research activities and initiatives. She also assists in conducting and managing policy-related and data-driven analyses on health centers, in particular on projects that aim to capture and measure patient complexity and projects that aim to build health center research capacity. She received her master's degree in culture, health, and medicine from the Australian National University. Today, she will be speaking on the topic of assessing and addressing the social determinants of health in community health centers and other community settings. So, let's hear it from Michelle.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. So I'm really excited to be here today to talk about a project that aims to assess and address the social determinants of health by creating a national standardized patient risk assessment tool that would let providers not only be able to collect data on patient complexity related to the social determinants of health, but then also act on that data to really inform care management, care for their patients, and really for policy as well. I have no relationships to disclose.
Oh boy.
Let's try that again. Great. So this project does focus on community health centers currently, and we are pilot testing the protocol that we developed in community health centers. So I wanted to give everyone a brief introduction as to what community health centers are. However, this is something we want all providers to use. We would encourage others, and we would just love it if it was be able to spread across other providers. But just briefly, so federally qualified health centers or community health centers are federally funded primary care organizations that serve medically underserved populations, and currently they are serving over 23 million people. So that's 1 in 15 Americans. So their reach is quite broad. They are required to provide comprehensive primary care services, serve medically underserved populations, be open to all regardless of an individual's ability to pay or their insurance status, and offer services on a sliding fee scale. So if you can only pay $20, then you pay $20. If you can't pay anything, then it's for free. One interesting thing about health centers is that they are community-owned and community-directed. So at least 51% of their governing boards need to be people from the community. So it really ensures that the community is there to really guide the direction of that health center and inform what types of services the community needs and should be provided. Because they serve medically underserved populations, the vast majority of their patients are low income. About 35% are uninsured, 41% are Medicaid insured, and then about two-thirds are racial ethnic minorities. So this is just a framework that we like to use to really show how upstream factors like the social determinants of health really affect kind of downstream health behaviors and health outcomes. I'm not going to go too much into this because I'm sure most of you guys are pretty well aware of social determinants of health, but this is from the Bay Area Regional Health Initiative, and we would encourage everyone to kind of take a look to show how more upstream factors and even systems that are in place. It's not just things that you are born into or with, but it's also kind of systems that are also in place. So why do social determinants of health matter? Again, I'm not going to go into this too much. We all know that they contribute to poor health outcomes and lead to health disparities. They make it more difficult to improve quality and health outcomes. It's hard to manage your diabetes if you can't afford the medication or healthy foods, or it's hard to manage your high blood pressure if you don't feel safe where you live, and so you're just stressed out all the time. But I do want to bring everyone's attention to kind of this last subgroup of bullets. So we are living in a value-based pay environment where financial incentives and public reported outcomes are kind of the norm now. So if you do not have the data to demonstrate that your patients are more complex and therefore they need different types of services, you as a provider, if you're serving more complex patients, are going to be at a disadvantage in this kind of environment. Again, provider outcomes are being publicly reported like a consumer reports fashion. And so if you're serving more complex patients, you could potentially get dinged for this if your outcomes are potentially lower than in other providers. So I can't stress the importance enough of having data to really demonstrate the complexity of your patients for these things. We could potentially use this data to inform policies such as risk adjustment, making sure that there is more kind of equal pay for taking care of different types of populations, or making sure that the extra services, such as enabling services, transportation services, health education services, all of those types of extra services that a lot of providers already do provide, making sure those are reimbursed and therefore make them sustainable. So fortunately, there are a lot of national initiatives that are drawing more attention to addressing the social determinants of health. This is just a brief list. A couple of things that I would like to bring everyone's attention to. ICD-10 is rolling out in 2015. That's going to be, they have a group of codes called Z codes that focus more on social determinants of health. So that's a great move in the right direction. The Center for Medicare and Medicaid commissioned a panel, this is this bottom bullet, for the National Quality Forum to convene an expert panel to recommend whether sociodemographic factors should be included in risk adjustment for performance measures. Again, that's another great move in the right direction. They met earlier in the winter and spring of this year, and they came out with a report that did recommend that, yes, sociodemographic factors should be included in risk adjustment for performance measures. And then after that report came out, there's a public reporting period where people can make comments regarding this recommendation. And interestingly, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid, they disagreed with this recommendation. And so we're kind of curious to see what the play out of this is. I know how they resolved it was that they were going to have a trial period to just kind of see. I think people wanted just more data to see how this could really be implemented. And I know the measure developers were kind of concerned about how this can really be implemented. So they're going to try out this trial period. But again, another step in the right direction. And then most recently, the Institute of Medicine had a committee to recommend social and behavioral domains and measures for electronic health records in regards to meaningful use stage 3. They just came out with their report, their second report, last Thursday, I believe it was. And so again, this is another great way to really start collecting data on social determinants of health. A lot of people are participating in meaningful use, so these will be included in that meaningful use stage 3. So these national initiatives are all really great, but what we really wanted to do is to really start collecting that data, especially at a patient individual level. A lot of the national initiatives use national level data, but we really want to drill down to that patient level, individual level data. So I'm really excited to be here to talk to you about a collaborative project that brings together the National Association of Community Health Centers, the Association of Asian Pacific Community Health Organizations, APCHO, the Oregon Primary Care Association, which is a state association for Oregon health centers, and then the Institute for Alternative Futures. And I'm very grateful for the funding that was provided by the Kresge Foundation, Blue Shield of California Foundation, and then Kaiser Community Benefit. We wouldn't have been able to embark on this journey without their support. Okay, so why is it important to collect data on the social determinants of health? I've talked about this a little bit briefly, but this is kind of, we call this our nested goals. So we really are trying to collect data to meet all of these needs. So at the micro level and at the very utmost important level is for the patient and their families. We want to be able to collect data on the social determinants of health that patients face to really provide them with that information so that they can feel more empowered to address it. We want to provide it for the provider so that they can better understand their patient populations and then better manage their patients and provide them with the needed services. At more of the meso level, a lot of providers feel, well, I'm a clinical provider, this isn't in my forte. We want to make sure that this data can help inform community partnerships that need to be put in place, such that if a community provider or healthcare organization can't address these needs, that they have those partnerships that they can work together to address these needs. And then at more the macro level, again, it's that policy, like how we're going, it's not sustainable right now because you're not getting reimbursed for all those extra services that you're providing. So we need to change that system, but you can't do it without the data. You need the data to demonstrate that patient complexity and then that what you're doing is effective. It's not enough just to say, oh, our patients are more complex. You have to demonstrate that what you're doing is meeting their needs and that there is value in that. So the name of the protocol that we have developed is PREPARE, and we chose this name very carefully. So that stands for Protocol for Responding to and Assessing Patient Assets, Risks, and Experiences. Now this is important. So Protocol for Responding to and Assessing. We want to make sure that this protocol isn't just about collecting data, not just the input, but that you can act on this data. That will not, it'll just make sure that patients feel more comfortable providing this data, knowing that it's going to be used to do something, rather than just collecting data for the sake of collecting data, and it'll also make providers feel more comfortable collecting this data because they can actually act on it and do something about it rather than feeling hopeless after collecting all this data. And then patient assets, risks, and experiences. We want to make sure that we're collecting data not just on the challenges that patients are facing, but what else do they bring to the table. We think that's very important to have that very holistic view of what patients are encompassing. So how will this protocol be used? Kind of touched on this a little bit already. Again, patients. It's really about patients first and foremost. We want to make sure that this data can be used at point of service care management. That's very important for both patients and providers, just to make sure that they can use this data to really inform the care that they're providing. Population health and quality improvement, this data can really allow providers to or organizations to stratify their patient populations and may figure out potentially which patients are most at risk or need the most help, so then they could potentially triage some resources to really impact those patients that need it the most, and then advocacy and payment reform. So this is a 3-year project. In year one, we conducted an environmental scan and developed a paper version of this protocol. In year two, we plan to pilot test this protocol and make sure that data can be collected reliably and that it's valid. And then we really want to make sure that it fits in workflow. That's very important to us. So what we're doing is that we're testing it in health center workflow with health centers and then what are called health center controlled networks. And those are essentially just groups of health centers that do receive federal funds to kind of achieve economies of scale, and that's mostly revolved around health information technology. And then in that second year, we would also develop electronic health record templates. And then in year three, we'll disseminate the tool widely and release a final report. We finished year one, and we are currently in the beginning stages of year two. So this is a busy slide, but this kind of walks you through what we've done thus far, and I'm going to walk you through each of these in more detail, but I do want to point out kind of the three buckets that are at the top. So in that first bucket on the left of the slide, it talks about what we did to identify what social determinants of health to include in this protocol. This middle bucket talks about how we came about designing the tool, so what is the structure, who's going to collect this data, at what point in time in the clinic visit, all those types of things. And then the right bucket talks about how we plan to implement and pilot test this protocol. So kind of this first bucket, how did we identify the social determinants of health to include in this protocol? So we conducted an environmental scan of the literature that relates social determinants of health to higher healthcare costs and poorer health outcomes. We reviewed about 40 articles for that. We monitored and make sure that the domains aligned with national initiatives going on out there. Again, if people are already going to be doing these because they're national initiatives, we want to make sure there's alignment so that people aren't doing two similar things that don't quite align or duplicating efforts. We want to make sure there is alignment because data burden is a huge issue that's on our minds, and we want to make sure there is as little data burden as possible. We also collected existing kind of patient risk of social determinants of health protocols that are in the field. We collected about 50, and then we came up with some criteria to identify those we wanted to interview, and then from that we came up with some criteria to identify kind of some top tools already in existence to really help inform what to include in our own. And then we engaged stakeholders for feedback. We want this protocol to be not only evidence-based, so based in the literature, based in the research, based in what's out there, but we also want it to be consensus-driven. It's pointless to have something that's evidence-based if it's not going to be used, so stakeholder consensus is very important to us. So from that, we kind of came up with a list of 15 social determinants of health domains. These are the criteria we used for the domains. Again, align with national initiatives, make sure that it's tied to research, stakeholder consensus, data burden, like how many additional questions do you really need to ask to get at this, is it actionable? Is it actionable for individual patient management and actionable for advocacy purposes? And then sensitivity. We know there are a lot of really touchy subjects, so we want to make sure that patients feel comfortable providing this kind of information and providers feel comfortable asking or talking about this kind of information. So we also took that into consideration. So here is the list of domains that we decided to include in our protocol. We have education, employment status, income, neighborhood-level variables, special populations such as veterans or homeless or agricultural workers, social support and stability. Do you have people in your life that you can go to? Do you live alone? Those types of things. Safety. Do you feel emotionally and physically safe in your where you live? Legal risk related to incarceration. Insurance status. Race and ethnicity. Transportation. Material security. So not just being able to, not just food insecurity and not just health insecurity in terms of not being able to afford medications, but also clothing, utilities, rent and mortgage. We think it's very important to kind of broaden that aspect. Housing circumstances, stress and resilience, and then limited English proficiency. We do have measures associated with all of these domains, so in terms of like the questions you need to ask and then the numerators and denominators. However, since the IOM report came out just about last week, we want to make sure there's a lot of alignment with that, so we're just working internally to make sure we can align that as much as possible with the IOM's report. So that's why I don't have the measures up right now. So this is where the difference between health centers and other providers comes into context. So health centers already currently capture those domains that are on the left. And so that helps us in the sense that you could potentially gather this information from the electronic health record or the practice management system to kind of auto-populate, if you will, the protocol and such that they would only have to collect those on the right. We understand there is still work involved in auto-populating, but the work is much less. So the second bucket, designing the protocol, again, we went to what is already out in existence. So through our interviews of existing tools, we kind of identified the top tools to kind of figure out what are some good structures or good workflows, good data maps. This is just an example data map, but this is something we want to make sure that the health centers themselves figure out how to do that works best in their own workflow, but we just want to provide them with examples to help kind of guide their thinking in terms of, like, you know, who could potentially and at what point in time in the visit. So this kind of walks through, you know, would it be auto-populated or does it need to be collected? How does it need to be collected? At what point in time in the visit? And who would fill it out? So this is just an example to help guide. And then finally, the third bucket, kind of how do we prepare for implementation? So we developed an application process, actually, that for health centers and health center networks. And we ended up with the four teams, if you will, kind of on the right. So there's one team that's based in Illinois and Iowa, so a Midwest team, Health Center Network of New York, and those are upstate health centers, so rural health centers, one in Hawaii, and then some in Oregon. But one thing to note that's really interesting about these four teams is that they are each on different electronic health records. So, and they're very commonly used. We have NextGen, GE Centricity, Epic, and eClinical Works. So one of the criteria for this application process was that they have to agree to disseminate the EHR templates and the codes and whatnot and training materials so that we can have broad dissemination for this. So we're really excited to have four different largely used electronic health record systems. So that's kind of where we've been. Next steps is that we're really preparing for implementation. That starts in January 2015 to really kind of pilot test, training the staff on how to use it and, you know, making sure that people feel comfortable collecting this data and then starting to develop the EHR templates. And then we will start developing kind of data visualizations and risk scores. You know, how, as a provider or a care team, do you want this information to be presented? What types of dashboards or what types of graphs? What other data could you link it to in terms of clinical or quality outcomes? Or even cost data, because a lot of areas actually already have access to claims data and cost data. And then we'll work on developing a risk score for risk adjustment purposes as well. Again, just kind of over the long term, I just can't stress enough that we really hope this project can really help better define and understand patient complexity, which would help improve patient care and then kind of care management in general, help you advocate for policy changes that help positively shape the social determinants of health, inform more appropriate risk adjustment. Again, this is a broken system right now. We need to fix it so that these things are more sustainable and that addressing the social determinants of health are reimbursable. We want to make sure we try to change that. We can aggregate this data and test the impact of population-based interventions, and then we could link patient complexity factors to what you're already doing to demonstrate the effectiveness of what you're doing. And that is it. Thank you.